I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. Well, it's one of those things that we do probably a couple dozen times a day. You don't even think about it. You thank somebody for bagging your groceries, holding the door, or whatever. Sometimes, though, a simple thank you isn't good enough. I mean, you get things that are far more complicated, thanking a friend who, you know, gets you through a rough night or takes you to chemotherapy. And then there are the bigger issues, you know, like repayment. And how do you repay somebody who, you know, gives you bone marrow or something like that? I know, seriously. Well, I'm joined here in the studio by Robin
Abrams. Starbucks gift card.
Always
good.
She's our social etiquette and writes the misconduct column and blog for the Boston Globe. You know, we were just listening to Callie Crossley talk to Dan Ariely, and you were saying this is something that Americans don't do well, that they don't repay or thank or what did you mean by that?
Well, what I meant is that, you know, as Dan was talking about the role of luck in and the role of the sort of support networks and being born into a good family, being born into a good neighborhood, having access to good education, the help that people gave us when we were young and clueless, that because we have such a mythos of bringing yourself up by your own bootstraps and the self-made man and all of that, it can be hard for Americans to acknowledge when they've been truly helped by another person. It can be psychologically painful because it goes against our image of what we ought to be, which is independent, the one who helps, not the one who is helped.
Kind of goes to that Obama thing about you didn't do this, you didn't build this company.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And it was interesting because that particular line was taken wildly out of context. But the fact that it took off the way it did really speaks to, I mean, surely people are aware that, you know, if you get up in the morning and you turn on the tap to brush your teeth, you've already consumed the labor of so many people. So many people have already helped to make that moment possible for you. We didn't do it all ourselves. But there's really a strong sense that if you can't claim that you did it all yourself, that your success and your accomplishments are not worth anything. And I'm sure you've experienced this yourself because you were saying how you often think how lucky.
I think about it all the time, every day.
But have you ever expressed that to somebody? It's like, well, I was lucky to get this. And they say, oh, no, you deserve it. You work hard. That's not the same thing. But it's very interesting when you acknowledge the role of luck and help. People often assume that you have low self-esteem.
Yeah, no,
And neither of us suffer from that, Emily.
To the family I was born into.
Yes.
I know that exactly.
Yes.
I'm not kidding anybody about that. But let's talk about, you know, we're going on to some of it is a heavy part of the discussion. Some of it is quite light. But it's
right.
Like, I know, but it's all complex about thanking and
we're moving out of the one big gift-giving season.
Yeah, you said that. What is it? Weddings?
Well, we're moving out of weddings, graduations season, and now we have this break.
Yes.
So, you know, enjoy it, folks, because, you know, Christmas shopping starts, you know, as soon as Labor Day. Then you start getting into the holiday season of gift-giving. So it's always, and I was just looking at my inbox, and it's one letter after another. I didn't get a thank-you note from this person. Should I write a thank-you note to this person for this? This person gave all the nieces and nephews presents for graduation, but didn't give my kid one. What's up with that? It causes people immense difficulty.
Yeah, they get hurt. My sister was saying that she didn't hear from my brother's daughter. She sent her a gift for graduation. It's like, and I said, oh, well, I never heard from those kids, and I don't give them gifts anymore.
There you go.
So it is a meaningful, even if it's a little thing, you know, a note or even an email at this stage of the game.
Absolutely. No, there's no such thing as a belated gift. There's no such thing as a thank you note that's too late to send. You know, thank yous are always, always welcome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, often, I think a lot of people, though, have a huge psychological block against the thank you note because there's a kind of performance anxiety. And so here it is, misconducts, three sentences. Sentence one, descriptive sentence about the use of the gift.
Yeah.
I am sitting here, you know, smelling this wonderful tea that you brought me. Second two, thank you for. Sometimes some people have gotten it in their heads that you can't say thank you for the blah blah in a thank you note. Of course you can.
Of course you can.
Yeah. Thank you for this. And then third, something about the relationship. I look forward to seeing you next summer, blah, blah.
I just got the perfect one in the mail.
Description, thank you, see you later.
Just got the perfect one from a friend who...
What was it?
Well, my sister and I had treated her and her family and her parents to a dinner that they couldn't pay for because it was, you know, a situation where we belonged to the club that we were... Mm-hmm. The note was perfect and just so fabulous and out of the blue. And it was like fun to read when you got home.
Yes.
So obviously, you know, I don't think she overthought it, but she just kind of had all three of those things covered.
Exactly. My favorite thank you note, I had bought a cousin of mine got married and I bought him and his bride some board games that they had registered for. And he sent a letter saying, you know, Melissa and I are, you know, very grateful for the Scrabble and all of this. And we look forward to playing them as soon as we get all these thank you notes written.
That is good.
Yeah, a little bit of humor is always
things,
good.
And I'm sure you've been in this situation, I know I have, where you can't really do anything. I mean, somebody has, you know, somebody who has extreme wealth or a place that they take you to, or there's something that there's nothing that you have in your arsenal that's comparable.
Right.
I mean, a thank you note, of course, you can do that, but you can't really repay that kind of favor or gesture or, you know.
You can't, and it makes people very uncomfortable. I mean, I don't want to be sounding like Americans are just these horrible, ungrateful people. We really feel that very strongly, and there's a fascinating article. I sent you a link to it. I hope you put it on the website. An article in the New Yorker about people who donate organs to other people, and it can really disrupt a relationship if you donate an organ to someone you know.
And then the people who do it to people they don't know.
Right, because it's simply too great a sacrifice. The relationship can't bounce back from that. It's kind of like, you know, hey, can you pick up coffee?
Yeah,
I gave you a kidney. You know? And it's just, it's too enormous.
Really? So, but I mean, I think some people do get past that.
Yes, they do. Well, yeah, obviously they do. And I think there is a great gift to being able to receive graciously as well as to give graciously, and an understanding that we're all in different places in our lives. I mean, you know, one person may be in a position to give money, another person may be in a position to give time.
Yeah.
And I think it's possible that this was less angsty, and here I'm just sort of riffing. There may have been less angst around all of this when communities were more settled, when there was less moving around, so that there could be the sense of, okay, Emily, you're rich, you have this beautiful house that you lend me in the summers, but, you know, someday, you know, my grandkid's going to marry your grandkid, and you know, it's like it all sort of pays and evens out in the long run. We don't have those kind of long-run relationships.
You know, but it was interesting, once again, going back to what Dan Ariely was saying, that they studied these wide ranges of people, even NPR listeners, and people got more satisfaction out of giving things than they did receiving. And so the people who are in a position to be able to really generously give, they enjoy that. So the fact that they are giving you enjoyment gives them enjoyment, and you just got to go with it.
Exactly. And I think sometimes what can happen is that you get this thing where, you know, person A gives person B something large and unrepayable, let's say, because of their different situations in life. And person B feels so guilty about the inability to reciprocate that they kind of underthank, as it were, person A. And person A feels like, hey, I did all of this. Yeah, you know, why aren't you more grateful? And if you simply acknowledge that imbalance, and that we all go through phases in our lives where we're more or less dependent, independent, able to give, required to receive. But it is fun to do nice things for people. And I always say, I often get people writing and saying, oh, you know, a neighbor snow blows my thing. What can I do for him? And if they're simply saying, you know, so-and-so, you know, has done something nice, what can I do? Then that's one thing. But if they said that they don't want any payment, I'm like, then just thank them. Let them bask in the feeling of having done a good deed for someone else. You know, we don't have to do the quid pro quo just instantly. You know, we shouldn't have to be keeping tabs on ourselves, on each other, to quite that degree.
I'm talking to Robin Abrams, who's our social etiquette and writes the misconduct column and blog for the Boston Globe. What's your assessment now? Does less of this happen, or is there less kind of congenial thank yous and note writing, and has that, or maybe is it generational? I'm not even sure anymore.
I don't know. Certainly people are complaining about it an awful lot, but you know, I'm now in a position where I see those complaints, and 10 years ago I didn't. So
what form do the complaints take?
I never hear from so-and-so when I send them a gift.
I see. Yeah.
Invariably, across the board. And often, it's funny, what you were saying about, you know, my cousins, yeah, other family members getting dragged in, you know, it's like the easy ones are when it's like, well, my cousin and my second, you know, granddaughter once removed, and it's like, just stay out of it. Not your problem.
Well, you know, there's a presumption in some families, maybe mine was a little bit of that too, where they didn't really have to. But then when it goes into the second generations, the children, the grandchildren, it's like, that you sort of expect, maybe, I don't expect a note from my brother, but from his kids.
Exactly, yeah. And that's kind of a funny thing. And I actually have a friend who's a writer, and she was describing her difficulty getting her son to start writing. Mm. Not thank you notes, just writing anything. And she said, wow, it bothered me so much. But then I realized he never sees me do what he calls writing. He never sees me get out a pad of paper and a pen or pencil and make marks on that paper and say that it's writing. Because she does it all on the computer.
Oh.
So it's like, and so, yeah, children will really only do the behavior that they see you doing. And I wouldn't write my mother a thank you note for a gift. She's my mom.
No,
it would
exactly
seem too formal.
Yeah.
But of course, I'd want my kid to. So.
Yeah, exactly.
But then, you know, how do the do as I say, not as I do, that never plays.
No, but that's where the parental role comes in. Send a letter to Aunt Martha about the...
and the best practice I've heard on that, although I would say it's not easy, is you don't let the kid have the thing until they've written the thank you note.
You don't let them, yeah.
They see it.
Oh,
They can, you know, play with it for an hour or whatever, and then it goes away until they've written that note.
All right, is there such a thing as excessive thanking?
Yes. I mean, when you've thanked somebody to the point, when you've thanked or apologized to the point that the other person feels uncomfortable, stop. And in Jewish law, and, you know, we're coming up on the Jewish High Holy Days, so I'm thinking about this a lot. There's a tradition that you only apologize to someone three times.
If they don't same thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If they don't accept your apology on the third time, then it's on them and you're free to go. I said, let's just say
three times.
Yeah, let's just say that with everything. You know, it's like, I thank you three times, and then it's, you know, it doesn't matter what you gave me, you know, a cup of coffee or a kidney, we're done. I thanked you.
I would think three times is excessive.
To apologize?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, once got to cover for me. Same thing with the thank you.
Okay,
for the same thing? I mean, unless you're, you know, rattling off my transgressions, you know, and then I apologize. Let me add this into that. And then we're up to three, but no.
Well, you know, these are laws about keeping a little group of people together over a long period of time. They needed forgiveness. They needed to forgive each other.
All right. Any final words of wisdom on the subject of thanking?
Never be afraid to thank. Never be afraid to acknowledge how much other people have helped you. Mm. And also know, sometimes when you've done something really big, no matter how good a job the person does thanking you, it's not going to be adequate. It's simply not going to feel enough for what you actually did. And that's an existential problem. That's not an etiquette problem.
And that is not going to go away.
Right.
No matter how many times you think. All right,
right.
Robin Abrams, our social etiquette expert.
Thank you, Emily.
Yes. Thank you. She also writes the misconduct column and blog for the Boston Globe. And here, I've got it written right in here. Thank you. Oh, no. Thank you. And Kelly Crossley, thanks for coming back.
And thank you, Emily. And thanks to all of you for joining us for another edition of Boston Public Radio. The conversation continues 24 hours a day on our Facebook page. We'll be back tomorrow with a look at what it would take to get guns off the street.
I want to hear
That's noon to 2 tomorrow. I'm Callie Crossley. Boston Public Radio is a production of WGBH.